Hello and welcome to the Soul Seeking Love podcast. My name is Alicia, but you can call me Leash. Join me each week as I go on a journey to answer life's biggest questions and probably ask a few more along the way. Thanks so much for joining. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed last week's episode, and this week I want to continue along with some of my introspections regarding dating and life in general, as I always do. But this one's going to get personal, so let's just jump right in this week. I've been thinking a lot about goals, desires, dreams, wishes. Why is it that some people seem to have everything they want? And, you know, take that with a grain of salt, because they might have everything we want. It doesn't mean they have everything they want. You know, it's beauty's in the eye of the beholder. And I mean that in a very general way. Like, my life might look perfect to many people, but to me it perhaps is not. But what is it that gives some people this sort of perfect persona, and it seems like they achieve everything that they wish to achieve, and they're happy, and life is good, versus the people who seem to constantly struggle, never get what they want, always having to work harder than most? And really, who is the judge of that? Right? Like, who's the decider of that? And I've been thinking about this a lot, and how I feel like I'm always more on the struggle side of things versus the life flows and is easy for me. And I wonder, you know, what it is that, what did I do to deserve this? And I'm just going to say real quick as a side note, I'm not going to get into deep political, socioeconomic type of discussions with this podcast. I'm talking about myself, my observations, my inner critic, and what I try to do to help myself move forward and get past that inner critic. Obviously, we all have different issues in life and roadblocks and actual legitimate reasons that the outside world is actually making it harder for us to accomplish the things we want to accomplish based off of our gender, identity, our race, our ethnicity, where we grew up, how much money was in our bank account when we were born, etc., etc. I'm not talking about those. That's not something that I can even talk about in one podcast, but all of that aside, assuming everyone's on a level playing field, because on a soul level, I think we are. In our human form, we're not. Our human form is, we were all created to pit each other against one another and learn how to figure out a way to work together in harmony. And unfortunately, it's a horrible thing that most people are enduring. And I don't know that it's for a specific reason. I can't really wrap my head around that. But without having to get into all of that, let's just say our souls are all on the same page. Because I do believe that. And I think in human form, some of us are luckier than others based off of the way that we came into this world, how we present, how we identify, etc. So I'm not talking to any specific group of people when I talk about this. And I'm not saying that it is just your own mind getting in your own way, because that's not the only thing at work here. But when we look at our minds and we look at our soul and we pretend the playing field is level, how much of us do we contribute to ourselves? And how much of our life do we have control over? And how much of it is just sheer dumb luck? And I think about this a lot. I feel like I've known so many people who just seem to be lucky. They just have everything they need. They don't seem to be ever without. And, you know, the more I ask the questions and do my own inner work, I realize that's not actually really true. But there are some people who don't necessarily have it easy, don't necessarily have advantages that other people might, but they float through life gracefully. Maybe not easily, but gracefully. And I, thinking about patience and thinking about all the lessons I've learned in the past 2 years, and there were quite a lot, as I'm sure all of you know. I mean, my lessons have been coming to me since I dove into spirituality, let's say when I became a yoga teacher in 2016. I've gotten a lot of information thrown at me, and it's been really difficult. And this was after the more difficult years of my life. But these past 2 years, I feel like the lessons I've learned are just being drilled into me even more, like over and over and over again. Like, yeah, we know that you know this, Alicia. We know that you know this pattern exists, but you quite haven't broken it yet. So we're gonna linger on this chapter, and you're not gonna finish it until you really get it. And it's just been like one after another after another. And, right when I think I get it, it's like I get a test. And, the universe doesn't really test us. The universe isn't saying, like, oh, you think you're ready to move on with this chapter? Well, guess what? You just failed. Do it again. It's not a negative thing. It's just a thing. It's like, okay, you're ready to move on? Then show us. And it's not a The universe doesn't want to see you fail. We fail because we fail. And that's what I'm going to talk about today, is self-sabotage. What is it? Why do we do it? And who the fuck is really holding us back? So when a lesson presents itself in our life, let's use mine. Let's use this example of ghosting. Let's continue that dating thing. I got ghosted. And as I said, I got upset because I don't understand. And really, if I dig deeper, what don't I understand? Well, I thought there was a connection. I liked this person. Okay. So there must have been something because I felt it. Usually those things aren't one-sided. If he feels one-sided, like I mentioned with the magnets, it wasn't one-sided. Okay. So what am I really upset about? That I'm not worthy. But who came up with that? It's not that that other person who ghosted me thinks I'm unworthy. I'm sure they have their own reason for leaving. I will probably never know it, but it's not necessarily about me. Probably 99% chance that it's not. And either they weren't ready, they weren't feeling it, they misunderstood the connection, they were scared about it, they weren't in it as deep as me. Maybe something from the past came back around. Who knows? A litany of different reasons. But I can't conceive of one that really would be specific to me. And yet, all the ideas in my head are telling me it's because you're not pretty enough. You're not smart enough. You're not thin enough. Every woman thinks that every fucking day. Not thin enough, or not curvy enough, or not this enough, or skin is not clear enough, or always something with our beauty standards. And I'm not saying men don't think this too, it's just not as common. Maybe more so now because of social media. I do hear a lot more men talking now about their bodies than I ever have before. But in general, none of us should be thinking like that. Or I just went through the list of reasons of why I wasn't good enough and why I was unworthy. And what's the real thought process at work here is that my inner critic tells me I am unlovable. I'm not worthy. I'm alone because I'm supposed to be alone. And really, that's not true, because there's a small, itty bitty, tiny little voice in the back of my head that's screaming so softly I could barely hear it. You badass fucking bitch, you're alone because you don't settle, and you easily could have. You easily could have, but you'd be miserable now because you had to deny a piece of yourself in order to accept everyone else. And yet, if you hadn't have been with everyone else, you wouldn't have learned that there were pieces of yourself you were hiding. And those lessons were there to expose that. So, I talk about Mr. Big a lot, and he was a big one. I don't know that he was the catalyst on the journey. No, he definitely was. The one before him was just as toxic, though. The one before him cheated on me. We were together for 3 years, going to buy, we put money on a house. It was refundable, but we definitely had a check on a house at some point and thankfully got it back. But he cheated on me and I lost my job all within the same week. It was a nightmare. And quite frankly, it ended as nightmarish as the entire relationship was. It was hot and cold. And quite frankly, karma came right to me because our relationship began while he was dating another woman who he told me about after we had already started getting into it. We were talking at that point. There was flirtation, there was an exchange of numbers, there was banter back and forth. And, a month later, I'm going on the vacation that they had planned. I knew what I was doing. I didn't feel guilty about it because he didn't make me feel like there was a reason to. And she became the villain in my story. She eventually came back in his life for one reason or another. I don't know that he cheated on me with her, but perhaps he ended up leaving for someone else, who we all worked with. I met him at work. And this was like over 10 years ago now, but it was toxic from the jump. So, of course, it ended in a harrowingly toxic way. It started in a toxic way. I just spun it in a way that worked for me. And then when I realized what my inner critic did to get through that, I was like, whoa, this bitch is fucking drama. I was like, wait a second, I'm that fucking bitch. I was like, this is awful. I got into a relationship with a man that had a girlfriend, and I acted cavalier as though, like, oh, I'm gonna wait until, he's officially over with her to be official with him. And that doesn't really happen. I never stopped talking to him. I didn't set the boundary like that. Technically, did it happen that way? Yeah, but I gave him an ultimatum. And it was obvious that he was gonna choose me because I was new and shiny and exciting. I regret any pain that that caused, but I think the pain came squarely right back to the middle of my face, smacked me right across with it. So I do feel poorly for that, but justice was indeed served. And I don't even know that I should think of it like that. It was just more of a writing, like a balance, not justice in a like, oh, you were bad and you were punished. It was all more of like a equilibrium has been restored in the universe now because I didn't realize that I was capable of doing something like that. And then when I did it and I spun it to make sense, I was like, oh, yikes, no, that's not me. And then, poof, Mr. Big arrived like my knight in shining armor. As a matter of fact, speak of self-sabotage. Let's talk about this. Let's get into it. I'm going to give you a real fucking story. How about this? Oh God, get ready. I'm gonna need a breath for this. All right, so I have brought up the story of my 25th birthday, which was September. I don't even know the year, but 9 years ago. 2012, I suppose. I had just lost my job. I was in a fight with my best friend who had just gotten married. I had broken up with my ex. And not only is my birthday the start of like the fall slash holiday season, because a month later it's Halloween, and then you're just on a roller coaster ride of parties and parties and people in love and, engagements and baby announcements and everything. And it doesn't end until February, which is Valentine's Day. I have blocked this out of my memory, but I'm going to resurface it for one more time. I remember it clearly now, but it's funny how, oh gosh, almost 10 years has gone by and I've almost forgotten about how self-sabotaging I really could be. So now I was at the lowest low at my 25th year and I made it through the holidays. And my ex, before Mr. Big, we'll call him the last one before my shift. So he was the last one of the old Alicia. Because I emerged out of the relationship with Mr. Big as a completely different person. I literally moved to Phoenix, if that couldn't be more symbolic of the type of person I've become. I'm completely different. So the last one with old Alicia, he was toxic from the jump, and I knew he was with someone else. I knew he was cheating on me. And yet I made it through the holidays that year because him and I still talked. And
I mark the season of my birthday to Valentine's Day as always being so difficult because that was so difficult that year. And on Valentine's Day, I met Mr. Big. And a lot had shifted in my life personally. That is another big complicated story. But I was deep in the hole of self-sabotage at this point in my life before I met Big. Because I was going through a personal hell. And the toxicity that ended the last boyfriend before and the, you know, losing my job, that was just the icing on the cake. That wasn't even it. That was just the cherry on top. But I had already been through this personal hell, and I met Big on Valentine's Day, and that became the marker for, like, my, I don't know, it was like the beacon. It was my lighthouse. Like, just get to Valentine's Day and you'll be all right. Like, you can get through the fact that you're alone and something good will come up. And it was almost like I manifested him. I had seen him at the gym. You know, I've told the story of Big and I. But anyway, the truth is, Big and I did meet on Valentine's Day. And I remember our first actual official date together. We had called it a date. We set it in stone. And even though we didn't want a commitment and we both lied to each other and said we weren't going to be with each other, our first actual official date was August 4th, 2nd. It was the beginning of August. And we met in February. So we were friends. It wasn't even physical with us at all. And I've never talked about this before, but we're going to get into it today. We were obviously attracted to each other. And I remember there was a night when I actually got a real conversation with him after that first meeting on Valentine's Day that we were at the bar together. I told you my friend invited me out. And I remember he said goodnight to me when he dropped me off and kissed me very, very softly, peck on the lips. And it was like the most timid, shy. I mean, we're 25 and 27 at this point, and he kissed me like we were 13, like he had never kissed before. And it was like shocking. Like it electrocuted me. And to this day, he said that he regrets not actually kissing me for real and putting it off for so long. But we didn't really truly kiss until months later. And we weren't physical at all. We were friends. We kissed here and there, but it was not, yeah, it wasn't romantic really for the first 5-6 months. And in that time, I was still talking to the guy before. I remember it clearly now because Big and I met on Valentine's Day. That first kiss came in the last week of February. And in March, there was snow on the ground still because it's Jersey and there's always snow. And I remember clear as day because I broke up with the last one in July 2012. And when there was snow on the ground after we broke up, him and I were still hooking up. We were still hooking up. I don't know that anybody even knows this. I don't remember who, if anyone, I've told. I'm sure some of my best friends. Actually, I'm sure they know this. But it's been so long, I haven't talked about it. But the truth is, I was self-sabotaging back then. So, that's the story. I remember sneaking away, walking down the street, lying, saying I was walking to my best friend's house. Because I could walk to her house and it was snowing and I did that very frequently. And instead, the last boyfriend that I had before Big was there in his car to pick me up. He was staying in a hotel room for work and that's where we went. I remember it clear as day. And that was after I met Big. I don't even know that Big knows this. I don't think that he does. I don't know that he'd be surprised, but it doesn't matter now. So, I remember, and I think it was more than once that something along those lines happened. We met up, yes, more than once. We absolutely did. And I know he's currently married to this woman he cheated on me with. He was with her, and he snuck around with me for months after we broke up. And while I had already met Mr. Big, I manifested what I thought was this knight in shining armor, which in a way he was, because he did pull me out of that old toxic lifestyle by creating more toxicity, of course. But sometimes, I don't know, fire puts out fire. I'd have to ask a fireman for that information. But
Yeah, that's how it felt. I was feeding the flames for sure with Big, but I needed to. Anyway, so I was with the last one while I was still talking to Big, and I think deep down, and the reason why I self-sabotage and what it really is that deep down, we can get everything we want and we know it. And he was standing right in front of me. And I remember the day he came up and introduced himself. Yeah, it was like an energy in me had shifted. And not because it was him. It wasn't like he turned me into this. It's not like I needed Big. I could have learned this lesson in a multitude of ways. This is just how the universe chose to show it to me. Big was the catalyst. It wasn't him that did the work. It was me. It was me that learned the lessons. It was me that was trying to self-sabotage. And the truth was, I was the one that lured him in. He was my white knight, but he was attracted to me in the first place too. It takes two. And we think when we meet our person that it's like a rescue in a way. It's like, men, you hear this all the time. Women, it's like they're rescued by their man, and it's like, oh my God, he's so perfect. Of course she will settle down with him. She's been waiting to settle down, and he's the one, always, right? And for men, it's oh God, look, she was just so perfect. It's like she changed him. She made him want to settle down. It's always that women are ready to settle down, and it's like, oh, he's the perfect one. He saved you from having to settle for someone lesser than. And men, it's like, oh, he changes his whole ways to be with her because she's just so worthy. It's bullshit. It's absolute bullshit. It's just when we recognize exactly what we want our lives and who we want to be played out in another person when we can finally settle down. When we see our match in front of us. And you can't see your match in front of you until you weed out all the things that aren't your match. It's usually the easiest way to do it. Well, what's your favorite food? I don't know. Try a bunch of fucking foods and then you figure out which ones you like the best. But if you only try one, you only know one and you don't really know. So it's the same sort of thing. And some people are just lucky. Some people just know themselves really fucking well and they meet somebody and they say, yeah, this is it. But some people don't. And I'm one of those people. I had a lot of dirt to sift through. So I was scared. I was petrified. And besides the fact that before I met Big, I was already petrified and I didn't even know it. I thought that I was this hard ass that was just, doing whatever she wanted and, finally got a job and was feeling a little bit better about her life. And I was still young and hot and I was like, screw it. If I want to hook up with this guy, I don't care. He cheated on me with her. I'm gonna do it right back. And I was continuing the toxicity and I didn't see it. So there was a part of me that knew Big could change my life in a way, and I could move on. And sometimes we need that. We need to know that there's something to leap into. I made this joke the other day with a friend. When we leave a job, we don't quit the job and then go looking. We find a job and then leave our current job to move to the new one. And yet, relationships we do completely differently. We spend time alone and we do nothing and we ponder and yeah, maybe we date and maybe we hook up and maybe we do fun things, but we take our time. Usually, there's not somebody in the wings waiting for us once we come off the stage. There's a period of mourning or celebrating, depending. So it's like one of the few things that we don't have that safety net. It's like in order to find someone, you first have to be alone. And we are, we're all born alone. But when you have someone, you still need to be alone again before you find somebody else. And I wasn't prepared. I wasn't ready to be alone. I wasn't really ready to be alone. And I was, it took me up until last year to really be comfortable being alone because it was ripped away from me with Big. And I self-sabotage with that too. And I'm doing it again now. So I'm going to bring it full circle. I'm going to bring it to the present day. But back then, I self-sabotaged in ways that I was not conscious of. I thought that I was just being free. And I wasn't tied down. And then, honestly, once I felt tied to Mr. Big, that was the end of anybody else, honestly. I did try to date other men on the many breaks that we had. And forget it. They had no chance. But, 10 years later, almost. Almost fucking 10 years later. I mean, it was just my 34th birthday, so almost 10 years later, here we are. And I'm still doing it. But the difference is, I notice it. And what does that mean? It means I can't really be self-sabotaging anymore, right? No, now I'm just consciously doing it. Now I know that the patterns that I have within me are defense mechanisms that I use to protect myself from feeling pain. And yes, they work. I don't feel pain. I'm quite very numb right now, as a matter of fact. And I've had to be numb in order to get through the past few weeks of things in my life that were not necessarily tragic, but just hard. I had a few shifts, exciting things too, good things, but I just needed to be focused. And this getting ghosted was going to throw me off my focus, and I couldn't. I had to be on my best game. And I have been. But there's pain under there, because there's that voice that's very loud telling me, you were left because you're not worthy. So the only way for me to get through it and numb is to believe that I'm not worthy and to start acting as though I'm not and self-sabotage by doing reckless, numbing, stupid things to avoid the pain. So it's like I take on the characteristics of my own wound, because I'd rather hurt me than have someone else hurt me. And that's the truth. I'm used to it. My inner critic is yelling at me every day. So what do I do? Well, what I've been doing, and I've been doing this quite a lot. This has been my main form of self-sabotage, and this looks different for everybody, but I got alcohol, and I would drink, and I don't drink to get drunk. I just have a couple drinks here and there. I've noticed that it doesn't make me feel good. I have a stomachache quite frequently, but I don't usually care. But I'll have a couple of beers or glasses of wine every night while binging TV, like stupid shows. I like to pick shows that make me feel bad about myself so that I wallow even further in the self-pity and the self-sabotage. Or I'll go out and go on dates with people that I know I'm not really interested in, but just want to prove by choosing the wrong people that I am worthy, which isn't actually proving anything. It's just proving that I know how to continue to self-sabotage. But I'll go on dates because I just want to feel admired. I'll go out and drink just because I want to forget. And I'll numb myself with stupid TV and shitty food. I do shitty food a lot too. Like, I will just eat fast food and watch TV and drink beer and isolate from the world, or go out and drink and party. But those are my self-sabotaging methods of choice, and that's what I've been doing. Not just because I've been ghosted, but what's deeper between that, past that? Yes, I was ghosted, but what's that really telling me? I'm alone. And here I thought I was past it. And here I thought I was ready to move forward. So what is it that makes me fear being alone? It's exactly what I just said about what I self-sabotage. My fear is that I'm going to be home alone every night, drinking beer on the couch by myself with no one to watch TV with. And I don't even want to do that. I don't really do that often. I mean, I have the past year, 2 years because of the pandemic. I've done it quite more than normal because I don't have someone to do things with, and I haven't been able to leave and go out because we were restricted for so long. But I can go for a hike. I can go to museums now. I can go to yoga. All things that make me feel really good. Going out to dinner with friends. Going for walks. Going for a run. Going for a hike. Exploring a new place. Traveling. I used to do that alone. I used to do that with friends. I've stopped doing it because I'm so afraid that I won't be able to forever, that I choose to do the thing that I'm most afraid of right now. And what the fuck kind of bullshit is that? That's self-sabotage. It's such a mind fuckery. I can't even wrap my head around it because what I'm saying sounds so utterly stupid as the words come out of my mouth, and yet I do it every fucking day. It's crazy. It's truthfully, it's insanity. It's expecting that someone's just going to show up at my door and tell me
I want to sit and watch TV with you because you're gorgeous. Like, no, it's not going to happen. Of course it's not going to happen. And instead of doing healthy things that would allow me to meet the right people and, you know, allow me to go out with my friends more or feel good in my body or feel good in my brain, instead of doing all of those things like meditate and hike and go to yoga and dinner with friends, I do the exact opposite. Because you can't beat me at my own game. The universe, yeah, maybe I'm going to be alone forever, but if I feel shitty about it now, I'll just be used to feeling shitty and it won't matter. But it's not true, because I don't really feel shitty. I feel numb. I consciously choose to self-sabotage and repeat the old patterns of doing stupid shit to feel numb, not to feel the pain. Feeling the pain is starting a new yoga regimen again because I've been off my game. And going back to class and having to be out in public and think, oof, I actually haven't done a headstand in years. It's been fucking years. I used to be able to do them on a stand-up paddleboard yoga in the middle of the ocean and not even fall. I can't even fucking do a headstand right now. So that's the pain. The pain is allowing yourself to have fun doing things that are probably going to make you uncomfortable again. Like meeting new people. Having to ask your friends out to dinner all the time, even if they might not be available, putting yourself out there, knowing that it means something to you, showing them that you care. It's easy to show people we don't care because when they don't reciprocate it, we don't feel hurt. But when you show someone you care and then they ghost you, yeah, fucking sucks. But that's the pain. You know? Sitting outside in 100 degrees reading a book instead of sitting inside watching TV in the air conditioning, I'd much rather be outside with the book. The sun burns the pain. But it's almost like the knowledge is the pain too. Knowing that we're better. We do deserve better. And it sucks because we have to sit with that knowing that we deserve better. And yet nobody else is here to revel in it yet. That's what sucks about being alone. Knowing that there is better. And you didn't deserve all the bullshit before. But not having proof of that knowing yet. That's fucking faith. And that's where the self-sabotage comes from. Lack of faith, lack of trust, and lack of trying, lack of putting yourself out there. And that's what I do. I'm terrified to put my faith, not in the universe, in myself, in knowing that I'll be able to move forward and find that happiness and peace and that flow and that effortless, you know, life is working with me, not against me feeling. What if I do have that? What if I do? And then I find out that I do, and I realize this whole time it's been me fucking stopping myself from it? Oh my God, what's worse? Not having it or knowing that you were the one in the way the whole time? Either way for me would be tragic, I feel. And that's the pain. And then that's the pain that I'll have to work through. The pain of knowing that if I just fucking got my head out of my own ass, I could have been here already, but instead I choose to sit on the couch or go out and make reckless decisions and be stupid, which I haven't done a lot recently, a little bit, but we're not going to get into that now, but not as much as I used to when I was young. I'd go out every night and get so drunk I barely remembered it. Now, I just have the pity party alone by myself because nobody wants to hear it anymore. Because mostly everybody is having their own fucking pity party now too, because 2020 and 2021 absolutely sucked. And if you haven't been doing this type of spiritual work and you haven't been awakened to your own bullshit yet, then you have now. Everybody's in it. And if not, then buckle up because your time's coming. And I don't say that in a harsh, like, you deserve it way. I say it in, I hope you figure out who the fuck you really are. And I hope you get yourself out of your own bullshit and your head out of your ass so you can move forward and you can trust and you stop self-sabotaging and accept the life that you fucking deserve. But guess what? You're never going to accept it from someone else unless you accept it first for yourself. So let's put a marker on that, because we're going to get into this a little bit more next week in a different way. But think about the ways that you repeat old patterns as a form of self-sabotage to avoid the pain by causing more of it. Think about that question. And I'm sending you so, so much love. Speak to you soon.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and I really hope you enjoyed the conversation today. If you did, of course, you know what to do. Subscribe, rate, review, share it with a friend. And of course, I'll see you again next week. Thanks so much and take care.